Please join me as we salute our nation's flag. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic, which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, everyone. May we have roll call, please?
Roll call, Director Mezquit.
Present.
Director Bilodeau. Director Green.
Yes.
Director Meeks.
Here. Do you hear me? Here.
You can't hear the volume.
Here.
Can you hear us?
Can you I can hear you fine. Yeah.
You can hear us, right?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Were you able to hear me as well?
Okay.
Director Meeks is here. Director Wynn. Director Sheldon. Director Tran.
Here.
Director Wigand.
Here.
Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Yeo.
Here.
Okay. You do have a quorum with seven directors present.
Okay. Do we have any items received too late to be agendized?
We do not.
All right. Now is the time for visitor participation. Would anybody like to speak? We'll listen. Anybody? Nobody here? Anybody online? I don't see any hands.
No hands.
Okay. Let's move to the consent calendar. Do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second.
Roll call, Director Mezquit.
Yes, I just want to confirm that you can hear me.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Thank you.
Director Bilodeau is absent. Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with seven yes votes with Directors Sheldon, Wynn, and Bilodeau absent.
Okay, Mr. General Manager?
Yeah, I'd like to take something a little out of order. We're hearing there could be a climate bond in Sacramento potentially approved this evening. And so we ask our state lobbyist, we have Jason Eichert and Jason Gonzalez on the call. I've asked them to just give an update on what the latest is in Sacramento. So guys, who wants to go first here?
Jason?
I guess pick a Jason. thank you, John, and good evening, Madam President, members of the board, Jason Gonzalez. I guess we'll go by order of age. I'm the old one, so I'll start. John is absolutely right. Things have been moving fast and furious here in Sacramento. They're in session, both houses, the Senate and Assembly, as we speak. There were three proposals amended over the weekend. The first one being the climate bond and most germane for our purposes was amended Friday evening and isn't eligible until 72 hours thereafter. So it's eligible this afternoon. There was also a school bond amended and a public safety counter initiative, which the governor backed away from last night. And I only bring that up because that was not eligible until about 7:30 this evening. So they're going to move quicker. They went into the Assembly at 4 p.m. and the Senate at 4:30. The Senate has passed the school bond. The climate bond is going to start in the Assembly. I've been told by members directly that it could be a tight vote in the Assembly. This past election, the Prop 1, the mental health bond, with very little and actually no real formal opposition, barely passed statewide. So there's some reluctance amongst members of the Assembly, most notably. It's a $10 billion bond. About $3.8 billion is slated for water resilience. We would anticipate PFAS falling into a category, if not a couple of those categories, as the state agencies would roll out the bond if it does pass. One thing I would note is the governor's office, while participating, they've been kind of ancillarily participating and not really until the 11th or perhaps even the 12th hour. So the governor hasn't given any private indication, at least we're told from members, as to the governor's position, and certainly I have not seen any public indication. the legislature were to pass the bonds, and the governor were to veto them, that obviously wouldn't bode well for leadership. So you would hope they have some indication, but at this point, I'd say it's a jump ball and it's going to be a tight vote on the assembly floor. So what I should have noted, it's a $10 billion climate bond, as you know, and it's SB 867 by Senator Allen, who had, you know, the same legislation with a much larger number lingering from last year and last session. So I'll stop there. I don't know, Jason Eichert, if I missed anything, but happy to answer any questions.
Very briefly, Jason, because we've heard much the same thing, and also Don Gilbert's on the line as well here. But heard much the same. It could be a tight vote in the assembly, and agree that it's not clear where the governor is. One wrinkle on that is that technically at the moment, both the governor and the lieutenant governor are out of the state. So the acting governor is the Senate President Pro Tem, who is supportive of the bond. That said, it would be a pretty big departure from the norm if a acting governor took an action that the governor did not himself support on something this large that was going to go before voters. But just wanted to throw out that is the case, at least for the current time. And then lastly, I think the only thing that we haven't really covered is the viability of the bond with voters. As Jason described, 38% of this bond is dedicated to water. But that is the part that is most appealing and traditionally and currently polls the best with voters. So even to the extent that the bill or the bond is passed by the assembly and the Senate, the governor signs it, it remains to be seen how the voters will react to it.
I'll also add, on Friday, Thursday,
Monday.
I'm trying to go back on this bill actually became public Saturday night. It wasn't in print until then, as Jason said. We took it to the Aqua State Ledge and we decided to go neutral and take a watch, as did some of our other water agencies who we just decided that I had figured less than a third went to water infrastructure, and it just wasn't worth it to us. But from what I was hearing, and I got some phone calls about signing on to this, the climate resilience or the water bond was actually the pro tems, and the education was the speaker's bonds. Is that what you understand?
That's my understanding as well, Madam President. And I would also note that, you know, other priorities like housing did not make the cut. So you're absolutely correct on that.
Agreed.
Okay. Any questions, comments? I don't see any. Okay. Thank you guys for staying longer to report on this.
Our pleasure. And I should note for the record, I said order of age, but Don Gilbert's on, so he should have really went first as the elder. have a wonderful 4th of July, Madam.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam President and members.
Okay, moving on to the sediment strategic planning and obligations. Lisa?
Yeah, there's a lot of work going on behind Prado and the sedimentation issues behind Prado. And Lisa's group has been doing a lot of work. We actually have a workshop at UCI next week. Assemblywoman Diane Dixon helped organize that, trying to get sediment from the dam down to the beach communities. So we just wanted to give the board a complete update on everything that's happening. And it's also a reminder to the board of some of our obligations that we have.
Great. Good evening, everyone. President Green and board members, happy to be here this evening. The planning department has been working very hard this last year in bringing the board several informational updates. Recently, last month, we provided strategic planning for invasive species removals within the basin, and also recently an update on our mitigation requirements. Tonight, I'd like to talk about our sediment strategic planning efforts and our regulatory requirements surrounding sediment removal in Prado Basin. We're going to break this down into short-term and long-term strategic goals, and also what is regulatorily required and what isn't, and how we should be planning for the future of our conservation pool. We know that it's filling up with sediment and it will over time, and we need to start thinking now about how we want to plan for the future. I'm going to start the presentation talking about regulatory requirements, and Sean Neville is going to come up and discuss our long-term planning ideas. Okay, so let's dive into what are our regulatory requirements and what aren't. I'd like to go back in time to our 505 year-round obligation, where we had a Prado feasibility study that was completed, and this is what allowed us to go to 505 year-round. To move that into existence, it had to be paired with an ecosystem restoration project. When I arrived, there was some confusion about whether or not the ecosystem restoration portion of the feasibility study was required. And as I dove into this, we found out that this is not a regulatory requirement. What happened here is we entered into an agreement with the U.S. Army Corps to do this work together, should there be appropriate funding to do so, and should either party want to pursue it. It does not bind us to actually do the work, but it is on the table should we want to do it. I'd like to re-examine whether or not this is a priority for the district and if we should be rethinking the costs associated with doing this project. So the capital costs for this project are hidden by pictures. Let me see if I can move that.
I think you can minimize it, yeah.
Okay. So the grand reveal for capital cost is $17.8 million. It's a big number. Okay, OCWD O&M costs would be $733,000. Now, when you have first glance at this, you know, it looks like a great deal because Army Corps is going to cover 65% of the capital costs, right? And OCWD would be 35%. However, the O&M costs would be OCWD 100%. And that seems like a good deal, but as always, the devils are in the details. What is in the fine print is that the invasive plant management and native plantings, the O&M, would be for 10 years. However, the Chino Creek restoration would be in perpetuity, meaning forever. So that would be a huge ongoing cost to the district. And Jeff Mosier and I were here last month to talk about a regional plan for invasive species removal that would be grant funded. So we think that we can get to this first box using that program if it were to be funded. That we think this is a way, you know, to still meet that goal, but to do it differently and fund it differently at a lower cost to the district and also the Army Corps. The cowbird trapping is already being done. Army Corps is doing that extensively on their own, and then we also fund that. We're even investigating whether or not OCWD should be doing cowbird trapping since it's already being done by Army Corps and it's a joint responsibility. Might be redundant. Chino Creek restoration, just so we have some clarity on what that means and what that is, it would be constructing a brand new wetlands, constructed wetlands that we would own and operate in perpetuity and maintain.
Would that be?
It would be in the Chino Creek area. I'm going to call a friend. Where is it Chino Creek? Where is that?
Later on, then I can show it.
Okay, you can bring it up in the in your portion.
Yeah, I can highlight that later, but it's in Prado Basin.
In the north.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. We're right now evaluating the future of our Prado wetlands, and one of the things that we're trying to evaluate is actually reducing the footprint of the constructed wetlands. So I'm not sure it's in our interest to go and construct brand new wetlands that we would then also be in charge of. So I do want us to reconsider this. And as we're reimagining what the future of the wetlands would be, we're just thinking right now, we're going to bring this to the board later, but we could convert some of that into riparian habitat and just return it to natural habitat, which would get to the third box, the native plantings. So if we converted some of our constructed wetlands into our own mitigation bank, we could also fulfill box number three. So I think there are other ways to get to meeting these wants and needs that we don't necessarily need to fund it. And again, it's not a regulatory requirement. I just wanted everyone to understand the situation as it relates to the ecosystem restoration work.
So the Chino Creek restoration isn't regulatory?
No. Nothing in green is a regulatory requirement.
I can't tell if that's
green. Oh, you can't. Oh, okay. Everything on the right side of the screen that points to ecosystem. It looks very green on my screen. You know, I think we need a new AV system.
Okay, on the left side is the yellow and the right side is the green.
Right. Yeah. So I'll refer to instead of colors, sides. So on the left side of the screen, you'll see that we have the 505 year-round water conservation. Everything on that side of the screen is a regulatory requirement. And we have met all of the requirements except for one, which is the sediment requirement. And I like to go into some detail about that. Okay, as part of the biological opinion for 505 year-round, there is a requirement to have two large sediment removal projects, 125,000 cubic yards of sediment in each sitting. The first would be at the front end of a 25-year period, and then another 125 at the end of that 25-year period. We are not in compliance on that. We were supposed to have completed that 125 cubic yards year one by 2022. So we are 2 years overdue on that compliance requirement. And again, the cost is hidden. I'm going to see if I can move it. The grand reveal to meet. You know, I didn't even plan this. This is just so great. The cost to do that type of project at that scale is roughly $10 to $12 million. So it's a big ticket item. And when I came on board, we of course had not budgeted for such a large project. And so I've spent the last year really trying to figure out how can we meet this requirement? How can we get into compliance and how do we move forward? So I'm going to share those ideas and the work that I've been doing the last year with you tonight. Okay. Now, the agency, knowing that this requirement would be coming up because it was issued in 2020, did do a sediment demonstration project in preparation. So they did go out, survey the area, and they removed 80,000 cubic yards. Okay, so that was completed. Now, unfortunately, during this project, there was a fire and they had to stop work. And so the sediment that was removed was left there on site and not removed out of the basin. And over time, it has grown into habitat and the stockpile was not maintained as a stockpile. The cost of this demonstration project was $4.3 million. And you'll notice that number is quite significantly lower than the anticipated cost if we were to do it. And the reason why is because that sediment was never removed from the site. And the bulk of the cost is transportation and disposal. Okay, so back to regulatory obligations. We've already covered the 505 year-round obligation, but we also have a 508 minor deviation sediment removal requirement as well. That is 1,200 cubic yards, much smaller, right? Much more manageable. It's also in a different location. So the 505 year-round is a specific area within Prado Basin below the River Road. This one is at River Road, right adjacent, and it wouldn't start, the compliance obligation would start 2026, so we have time to meet that. So we're not out of compliance on that one. We're still planning for that. Now, Ben Smith up at operations is regularly removing sediment from that location annually. It's a different amount every year, depending on the need. And we have been tracking over time how much he has been removing. So we have kind of a banker's log on sediment removed at that location. One of the ideas is to speak with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, who sets this obligation, and see if we could have credit towards that regulatory requirement. It's a, I believe, a five-year requirement. And if we add that all up, and we could see if we've already met that requirement with prior work completed. I don't know if they'll go for that, but I think we should try for that. And if they don't, that's fine. This is something that we can do pretty easily. Okay, you may be wondering, you know, why haven't we done the larger work to date? You know, why are we 2 years out of compliance? Well, this also, you know, we had the fire that happened in the area, so that kind of put a stop to things. We also had COVID happen at that time. So, you know, everyone went home. It was very hard to do planning and just even get workers together to do a project like this. You have supply chain issues that were definitely problematic. Costs, of course, increased significantly during that time. There was also the thought that we could renegotiate the compliance requirement itself. Instead of doing 125,000 cubic yards in one setting, maybe it would make more sense and be more cost effective if that was broken down into smaller amounts throughout the 25-year period. And then, of course, you know, the big problem, and we're going to talk a lot about it today, Sean's really going to dive into it, is the transportation and disposal cost. It's just so high. And the agency has been putting all their time, effort, and funding towards PFAS treatment. And so, you know, this would have been really hard for the agency to take on. We still need to do it, though. So let's talk about how we're going to get this done. Okay, I realized pretty quickly that we weren't going to be able to pay for this with the competing interest of PFAS. So I wanted to dive into our local sediment community groups. And I started introducing myself and trying to figure out what the sediment needs were locally, our coastal communities, you know, who has sediment, who needs sediment, how can we match up, how can we help each other. So I made some good friends at the OC Public Works and Parks and Recreation. And I think it was my first or second week, we decided we would write a grant. And they had done 80% of the grant writing already, but they were not capable of submitting it to NOAA. So they asked if our agency would be willing to be the front for the grant. And that allowed for me to add in all of our project costs to complete this project. So we put in for the full amount to complete this regulatory requirement, and we asked for $15 million over a five-year term. And we had several partners, of course, on this grant proposal. It was a wonderful collaboration, you know, and unfortunately, we were not awarded the contract. So that was disappointing. However, we got rave reviews from the reviewers. So that was a little bit of a consolation. They loved the idea. They saw how important it was for regional collaboration with sediment removal. They just thought it needed more So I went out, I did not give up, and I started talking to even more people. And I've worked with SCORP for 20 years in my career with through different agencies. And I found out that one of my colleagues there also put in for the same grant, also for sediment, but instead of the implementation portion of the grant, he put in for a planning grant. And so I asked him if I could get in on that grant because they were invited to proceed further into the process. So there was an opportunity for us to get involved. And so he said yes. So I was able to get in on that. And what you'll notice is this is more of a university-based collaboration. It's a planning effort to bring people together to figure out how to match people up who have sediment with people who need sediment. And one of the key players here is Dr. Brett Sanders from UCI, who we will be talking with next Thursday. And again, we put in for $1.5 million for over 3 years, and we did not get it. Again, they love the idea. They think it's great. This need at work, but they ultimately did not fund us. So heartbroken after being, you know, denied twice, I still did not give up. What we did is we all got back together in our sediment community, and we asked, okay, what can we do next? What is out there? What's in the world that we can use to help us right now? And what we found out is that in Northern California, San Francisco Estuary Institute received a grant to build a sediment dating app. And they built it locally. And it was to help them do the same thing that we're trying to do down here, match people up with people who need sediment and people who have it. And they built it for a very small portion of the community. They inputted things, and then they ran out of funding because the grant ran out. And in that application, there's no way to tell if there were actually any matches. So all the sediment profiles are uploaded, they're sitting there, but you have no idea if there was any success. So we decided we would call them up instead of reinventing the wheel. And we would ask them, can we use your application and expand it for Southern California to see if we can make some matches down here? And would you be willing to modify it so that the sediment profiles that exist here could be input correctly? Because, you know, Northern California parameters are slightly different than our coastal community parameters. So we contacted them. And they loved the idea. They thought it was fantastic. The tool has just been sitting there, not used for many years. And this is an opportunity for them to expand the tool use. They would love for it to be a statewide tool. And they love the idea of Southern California being a pilot to help build it. And so our master's student intern in planning has been working diligently to input Prado Basin sediment profile and the coastal community sediment profiles. And you can scan this QR code and it will take you to SediMatch, which is the name of our dating app. The planning staff love to call it Sediment Tinder, just for fun. I think this has a really great potential to help bring people together and figure out where's your closest match? Because as I've mentioned, the transportation cost really is the barrier. You can have a match, but if you can't fund that match, it's pretty useless. So here you can see in Southern California, you've got some dots now in there, and that's because of the effort that we've done. Okay, so Prado Basin. We immediately put in our Prado availability. So the blue triangles represent people who have sediment, and the red circles represent people who need sediment. And what happens, you upload your sediment profile, you say what you have, what type of sand do you have, or what sediment, could be sand, silt, how you can get to it, how you can transport it, when it's available, all of those kinds of information. And there's even more. And we've been building this out. And same goes for coastal communities in need of sediment. They get to upload their profile needs, and then hopefully we can make a match. So we've been lucky enough to have several local stakeholders who are helping us develop this proof of concept tool. And right now it's heavily dominated by people who need sediment. And so I've been reaching out to others who might have sediment. So San Bernardino Valley has sediment. LA has sediment. So we're going to start populating this so it's not so one-sided. And we're also going to start working with private entities because there's a lot of private people who are selling sediment. So, you know, coastal communities are willing to purchase if they can find it. Okay, as we've started developing this, we had a wonderful thing happen. A private entity contacted Ben Smith and said they're interested in our sediment. And so Sean's been working with Gale Industries and has taken them out there to our sediment demonstration project to see if they'd be interested in what we have. They are extremely interested in what we have, and so much so that they're willing to do everything for free. So that means they would shore up the roads and make it so that equipment could get out to the basin. They would extract all of the sediment for free. They would transport it for free. Pretty much save us $10 to $12 million. So this is a great opportunity, and we would be in compliance. So this is better than getting a grant. It's a lot less work.
And where are they going to take it?
So they are an international sediment supplier. So what they would do is they would take our sediment and then they would clean it and do whatever they need, sort it out, and then they would resell it. So they would be making a profit off of this, which is why you can see they're so excited to get it for free, right? Because this is a regulatory obligation for us, we would not be able to charge. However, once we met our regulatory obligation, we could discuss royalties and see if this could be, you know, a way for the agency to make some money in the future. So it's just, you know, an idea, a strategic planning idea, and maybe a long-term partnership that would benefit the agency. So we're looking into that. Now, of course, you know, we're super excited about this opportunity and we're just like, let's get out there and start digging, right? Okay, well, we got super excited and then we had to pause. And we need to, first of all, negotiate compliance terms with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So we need to pause and we need to talk to them about a compliance plan. And working with Nate Schievel, he's done a lot of work for the district in the past. He used to work for the district, and he is the sediment expert in the watershed. And just like before with the sediment demonstration project, you need to go out there and assess the current situation before you start digging a big hole. And the reason why is if you take out too much sediment too fast, you might undermine the River Road Bridge or cause upstream effects, unintended consequences. So we need to be really smart and diligent before just going out there and starting to dig. And so we are requesting a services agreement for Nate Schievel to come out and take a look at the situation where it currently stands, develop some alternative analysis for us for compliance plan options that we would then go to U.S. Fish and Wildlife and ask if we could do. We would then have a very strategic sediment removal plan, short-term and long-term, and then a monitoring plan to make sure that the removal efforts are not doing anything upstream that would not be good, right? So we are asking, oh, it didn't play in. We are asking for $170,400 for a contract to do all of this with Nate. Slightly different number than what's on the agenda report. The agenda report says $170,000. It's missing $400. So just FYI. But that, you know, this is a very small amount to fund for the $10 to $12 million cost it would take for us to do it. And this would also help us get Gale Industries out as quickly as possible to at least start doing something and showing due diligence with U.S. Fish and Wildlife that we are trying to meet our regulatory requirement, because they are asking. So what's next? We have a lot going on with sediment. It's a very popular subject. So next week, on Thursday, July 11th, we have the UCI conference, where I'll be speaking about our sediment obligations and what we're trying to do to work with coastal communities to help make matches, sediment matches. We are also having a one-on-one. General Manager John Kennedy and I will be meeting with Army Corps of Engineers to better understand the work that they are doing in the river and how that work is affecting sediment transport into Prado Basin. So we all need to kind of work together and understand what we're all doing so that we can develop a compliance plan. And we're also both responsible for the sediment compliance under the biological opinion. So we want to come together. And then the very next day, on Friday, July 12th, we're having a regional sediment workshop meeting with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, San Bernardino Valley, Army Corps, and us. And the reason why is because U.S. Fish and Wildlife feels that Seven Oaks Dam is having an influence on the sediment transport that is coming to Prado. So we're looking to do a regional strategic plan for sediment where everyone has a role. And we're going to figure out what our roles are, what the concerns are, and then make compliance plans around that. So that's the intention. And then, of course, we're hoping to renegotiate our current compliance obligation into something that will do no harm to the River Road Bridge or upstream. And that's where we stand. And that's what's next. So I think a lot of exciting things. And next up is to talk about our long-term strategic plan and thinking. And Sean Neville is going to take over from here.
Thank you. Good evening. So Lisa spent a lot of time talking about the regulatory requirements that would result in sediment removals. I'm going to be talking about long-term sediment removal planning efforts, and with the idea here that we would be removing sediment, or we're at least looking at options to remove sediment to create additional water conservation space, or at the very least maintain our some amounts of our existing water conservation pool. Part of this effort is that we're currently in the early stages of developing a sediment master plan. The master plan will identify the district's goals in sediment removals over a long period of time. It'll identify the constraints and the challenges in doing that, and it would identify the alternatives. Later in my presentation, I'm going to discuss at least an overview of our conceptual alternatives. So we'll get to that in just a bit here. Before I do that, I want to back up a little bit and give a little bit of background on sedimentation in Prado Basin. Why is it happening? Why do we here at OCWD care that sedimentation is happening at all in Prado Basin? So sedimentation happens at every dam throughout the world. It's just a common problem. Sediment comes down to the river. It hits a pool of water. It either slows down or it stops. The sediment falls out. The water continues on, but the sediment remains trapped behind the dam. Prado Dam does a pretty efficient job of removing sediment and depositing it. About 97% of the sediment that comes downstream stays in Prado Basin. Now, this graph is a really interesting graph. What you're looking at are at each of these lines are different surveys that were done over the years, starting in 1941, being the top one, the blue, dark blue line, and the lower one being done more recently, 3 years ago in 2021. And what you're looking at is a calculation of the water storage volumes in acre feet at each elevation level. And if just looking at 512, we're using 512 as sort of a planning elevation that we look at, because that's where we ultimately expect to get to for water conservation. What you see here is that in 1941, There was about 65,000 acre feet of water that would have been available in storage at elevation 512, but the most recent survey shows a 48% reduction down roughly around 35,000 acre feet of water. So that is purely a product of sediment coming into the basin, filling up the basin, and reducing the amount of water storage that could be held in Prado Basin for water conservation. So our calculations are there are approximately 600,000 cubic yards of sediment that comes into Prado Basin every single year. And if you're wondering if that's a lot, that's a lot of sediment. And to put that into some perspective, if we were to calculate how much sediment occupies the space that 1 acre foot of water can would hold, it's about 1,600 cubic yards of sediment. So that translates to about 370 acre feet of water that we're losing to sediment every single year in Prado Basin. If you wanted to remove the amount of soil, the amount of sediment that would create that 1 acre foot of space, you would need 150 truckloads of sediment to be hauled out of the basin. And if you wanted to remove all of the sediment that comes in every single year, you would need 50,000 truckloads, which is an awful lot. And another little perspective there, if you put those 50,000 trucks end to end, that goes from San Diego to Santa Barbara. So it's an awful lot of trucks. A little bit about costs of removal. It costs now, these costs are based on an assumption that we don't have a partner that is willing to haul away the sediment and dispose of it or otherwise use it for some other use, and that we have to just take this to a landfill and dispose of it. Costs about $150 to $200 per truck to haul away and dispose. That includes disposal fees. And going back to that concept of, how much sediment it would take to create 1 acre foot of space, it would cost about $20,000, to do that. And if we were to remove all of the sediment every single year, that 600,000, it would cost about $40 to $60 million, and that's just hauling and disposal. So, the story here is it's very, very expensive. Most of the costs involved with sediment removal is in the hauling, the truck hauling, and in disposal if you don't have an end user. Long-term trends, we currently have at elevation 512, we have about 33,500 acre feet of available. In 50 years, we see that reducing by more than half. You have about 16,300. That sediment, the sedimentation is happening. It's flowing into the basin as we speak right now, and it's going to continue to fill up the basin unless the action's taken to remove it. So we're preparing a master plan. We are looking at conceptual alternatives. I do want to stress these are conceptual right now. We're in the early phases. We have a lot of conversation to have internally, and we have a lot of technical work that we need to do before we are able to refine these alternatives. I'm planning on giving you a very brief overview of some of the alternatives we're considering. I'm going to intentionally move quickly, but I encourage you to ask questions. I'm happy to come back to some of these. So the first one I'll discuss is stockpiling to offsite parcels. What's critical to understanding this one, a little background, there's the magic 566 line that goes around Prado Basin, elevation 566. And you are not allowed to build permanent habitable occupied structures below 566. Anything above that, you can build. And so if you've been out to our Prado field office, you'll notice that those are not permanent structures. And that's intentional. That's because we're complying with these regulations. This concept would remove sediment from Prado Basin, convey it to these northern, see if you see my cursor, these northern parcels up here. These parcels are kind of a hodgepodge of privately owned parcels that are used for farming. There's and several publicly owned parcels. Notably, Orange County owns some of these. So we would either purchase land or partner with a partner agency and to allow sediment removal and deposition on these parcels. The idea here is that you would create a stockpile, a large stockpile that could be made available as sort of a come and get it for beach communities or other public entities. And in the absence of that, any partners that would take it away, we would build up, spread that sediment, build up the land. And at a certain point, you would reach above the 566 elevation, which would make the land marketable. So there's kind of a dual goal here in this alternative, which would allow for a very long-term, large-scale removal of sediment, somewhere to put it that doesn't involve expensive truck hauling and potentially some revenue that could be generated to offset some of the costs on the back end if the land is made more valuable and sold. Re-entrainment of below Prado Dam. We've discussed this before. We've looked at this before. The concept is you take sediment, you put it into a slurry line, and you move it somewhere downstream, likely somewhere around Imperial Highway. And this would really recreate what naturally would happen in the absence of a dam. The sediment would move downstream. It would move, natural forces of the river would eventually push that sediment down, hopefully to the ocean. And that sediment would be able to, at least in some capacity, help with beach sand replenishment at the coast. We'll be looking at constructing a sediment trap either in or near the existing wetlands area. The idea here is that you have readily available road access near our Prado field office, and sediment could be excavated, stockpiled, and made available to for truck hauling by any other entities that are interested, beach communities, Caltrans, OCTA, etc. Lisa talked a little bit about Gale Materials, who were interested in removing sediment. We'll be looking at evaluating the potential for a public private partnership, essentially just that. And there may be other companies that would be interested in doing this. And so we would allow them to remove sediment. We get the benefit of having more space created for water conservation. They get the benefit of utilizing this sediment for commercial purposes. So there's something of a quid pro quo in this alternative. And then the last of these active sediment alternatives is conveyance by rail. So the BNSF has a rail line that comes through roughly paralleling the 91 in this area, highlighted in the yellow box. It goes through an industrial area in Corona. And it's near Prado Basin. The concept here is that sediment can be pumped or moved by truck trips to a stockpile site. There, we expect that a spur line or some kind of a sideline would be needed to allow for train cars to be filled with sediment. And that sediment could be moved by rail to an end user. Ideally, at least conceptually, there would be a stockpile site that could be made available, let's say in South County, Orange County, that beach communities could ultimately use. So this concept would avoid the truck hauling, but it would allow for us to move sediment out of Prado Basin where it's not wanted to a location where an end user would want to use it. So a couple other conceptual alternatives, that these are what we call passive management. Alternatives, they do not involve actual sediment removal. The first is modified Corona Airport, which may strike you as why would we do that? Corona Airport represents the biggest challenge for us to go higher in the basin in water conservation. You can see in the dark green shaded area that demonstrates what inundation looks like at elevation 512, where we ultimately expect to go for FIRO, at least at this time. And as you can see, it's approaching the airport, but it's not impacting any facilities there. And that's by design. If we were to go higher to say 516 in the orange shaded area, you'll see it's starting to get real close to the runways. You're starting to impact some of the outbuildings, some of the hangars. And so the concept here is that instead of dedicating resources to digging and removing sediment, instead you allow the sediment to continue, and we continue, keep evaluating potential sediment removal projects. But in the meantime, resources are dedicated to finding opportunities to modify Corona Airport that may involve relocation or some kind of armoring to make Corona Airport more resilient and allow us to hold water at a higher elevation. So essentially, we would just be raising the elevation of the water con pool to correspond with the rising sediment sedimentation. And the last one, and I want to stress that this is not something we're proposing. This is just, we consider this to be sort of a no project alternative. But in this, we would be looking at seeking other water sources. It's something we have plans. We have ideas for how we could seek other water sources. But in this alternative, the sedimentation continues. We monitor and continue to do a cost benefit analysis of future sediment projects. But in the meantime, the resources of the district and our partner agencies are dedicated to finding other sources of water, and we just let the sedimentation continue. So I know I moved quickly through these. I'm happy to go back and discuss any in detail or take any questions you have.
Please.
What is the quality of the sand? Like, is this something like a beach community would really want, or is it more like silt and mud, or is it a combination? Like, how do we, you know, decipher out what's good sand that a beach would want and what's sand that maybe industry would want?
Yeah, we've actually had conversations. We've had some of the beach communities come out, OCTA, because they're working on their tracks down in South County, have come out and looked at the sand. They've done some analysis. It's beach sand. It's outstanding sand. Now, there are some, you know, technical aspects of that. They have to go through Coastal Commission to put it on the beach, and there's certain things that they need to do to make sure that it meets the exact specifications. But it's high quality. You know, it looks like beach sand. If you walk out on and where we did our sediment demonstration project in 2020, it'll feel like you're walking out onto a beach.
And how much sand, you know, the one option that was putting it into the river and then sending it down.
Yes.
How much sand do we get, you know, annually on that? Is there just naturally occurring sand that will work its way through the dam and out? Is that?
Yeah. So we estimate about 3 to 5% of the sediment that comes into Prado Basin makes its way through the dam. And that probably varies from year to year based on high flows that are, you know, this year we had a higher release. So I'm sure there was a heck of a lot more sediment that went through the dam this year than would go through in most other years.
Got it. Thanks.
Director Meeks has her hands raised.
Okay.
Going back to, the sediment, and I appreciate that we are getting the sediment removed for free, that somebody wants it. But I really also like the matching with these other cities and beach communities that need the sediment. And I think partnering with them needs to be a priority. I hate to give this high quality sand to a private entity for free so that they can turn around and sell it at a profit to another public agency, because I think we should be helping each other. So can I get a little more information on that? We talked about part matching it up, but then we talked about, hey, I found this person that'll, you know, take it for free.
Absolutely. You know, and that was our initial and intended goal is to be good partners with our community. We've had the beaches come out and take a look. And again, they really like the sand. The problem is neither party can afford the transportation cost. It's just insurmountable. So as much as we both would like to do the match, we have not been able to find a funding source for that match. We would like to keep continuing with grant proposals, and actually OCWD just hired a consulting firm to help us fund matches. So we're going to be using consultants to help us look for grant funding that would help us make those matches happen. But currently, neither party has the money to make that happen at this time. So we're fighting a regulatory compliance obligation that needs to happen under a time limit. Right. So our first priority is to be in compliance. And then when and if we can acquire funding, either through appropriations or grant funding, we would gladly love to give it to the coastal communities.
Okay. So we're not entering into any agreements that would prevent us from switching strategies and partnering with a beach community that needs the silt or the sand.
Yeah, and currently we have no agreements on the table. We are asking to do a strategic plan and evaluate all of our options and understand, what we can do, how much we can take out. But I think that's an important thing that should be considered in our strategic planning, is making sure that if funding is available, we give it to people in need first.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, President Green, and thank you, Lisa, for the a great presentation. This is awesome because we at Caltrans we have a lot of roadways along the coast, well, Pacific Coast Highway P1. In Ventura County, we've had issues with Coastal Commission where we when we implement projects, they're requiring us to do some type of mitigation. And beach nourishment is one of them, but obviously this is too far from Ventura. But we have similar issues in Orange County through Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
And so, just started this year in Caltrans, State Highway Operation and Protection Program. There is a category, for sea level rise. And I think that there is a need for some type of protection for the Pacific Coast Highway in Huntington Beach. And so, I definitely will share this information with my colleagues in Orange County. And so if there's some type of project that they're developing for sea level rise, this may be an opportunity for them to work with Huntington Beach and Newport to try to, maybe beach nourishment of some sort for the two communities. This is great. Thank you.
Director Whitaker.
Yes, what's interesting to me is the notion that the sediment has a commercial value, and being able to cooperate with the private sector on that to allow them to bear the costs creates a profit model that maybe is a win-win all the way around. So that looks very promising to me. The other aspect is the possible rail transport. It would be helpful, I guess, for points south, like San Clemente and areas like that. I know our greatest need is Seal Beach, Huntington Beach, and that area, and it tends to naturally trend south from there. But was there much interest from those areas, from more south county?
Yes, I mean everyone's interested. Everyone wants what we have, and again, just the issue is transportation. Even with rail, they require 100 cars to transport directly to the south. Otherwise, they have to go to, I think it's Bakersfield, and then reroute. So there's a limit, And then they also don't have a way to load right from our area onto the rail, and they have no way to unload at the locations. So there would be infrastructure costs that would need to happen as well, and that would likely take a while to build and find funding for. So again, we have all of these logistic things that are kind of getting in the way of doing those matches to the coastal community. And one of the things we're noticing as we develop the tool, the matching tool, is that the people who have sediment are inland, right? And the need is all coastal. So again, the private partnerships might come in. Those might be closer to coastal communities. They're willing to purchase. They just need to find someone who can offer it and where the trucking distance isn't so far.
Thanks.
Anybody else? I wanted to thank Director Wiegand for bringing this idea for just getting sand to the coastal areas, and then working with Assemblywoman Diane Dixon for doing this. And that's where the UCI meeting came from. So maybe we're going to get there. I don't know how, but unfortunately, the thing that all of us kept saying is it's the cost that seems to be so insurmountable. So maybe Director Yeo has an idea on how maybe we can get that done through, are those grants that you're talking about?
And the mitigation cost transportation project. You're going to do this, you're going to do that.
Okay. So
So they would fund, like in lieu funding, you know, it'd be like a funding mechanism.
Yeah, it will be a mitigation bank that set aside for the purpose of beach nourishment, but it's part of the overall transportation project related to sea level rise. You know, part of it is to do some type of rock revetment, but Coastal Commission doesn't like that. They want to restore the beaches. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we're on to something. Thank you for your report. Your report was great. Really interesting. So thank you for doing that. Okay. And next we are moving on with.
Do I need motion. To make a motion? Yeah. I'll make the motion to approve the 170 plus 400 or something you said in there for the contract with Schiebel Engineering.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Roll call, Director Mezqua.
Yes, present, yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Tran? Director Wiegand?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 8 yes votes with Directors Bilodeau and Sheldon absent.
Okay, and moving on to informational items, SAPA update, Director Whitaker.
Yes, thank you. Yesterday morning's Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority meeting, there were 4 commissioners in attendance, and there were 2 main items that were discussed. One was approval of the SAPA building lobby remodel and security improvements and also necessary ADA upgrades. And that was approved unanimously. The second was more an informational item. Rick Wetzel of SAPA presented on LECL-TMDL, which is Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake, total maximum daily load, and the management efforts to keep those recreational and even some drinking water from Canyon Lake in balance and to maintain and improve and meet regulatory requirements as well. That was pretty much it. Details are contained in the packet beyond that.
Okay, thank you. We have no committee reports, correct? Okay, moving on to verbal reports. I already gave mine on what Aqua did. General Manager?
Nothing to report.
Okay, Director's report? Buddy? Okay, General Counsel?
Yes, Madam President. No closed sessions this evening, but I was going to, on all this discussion about sediment, some of the work I do is up in Ventura County, and there's Matilaha Dam. It's an interesting contrast because if you want to see what it looks like when sediment overtakes a dam, there's a giant dam face on the downside. You're like, wow, big dam. And you go to the top, and there's nothing. It's basically to the top of the dam. It's crazy. So you got to do something eventually. But if you want to see what it looks like when you don't manage sediment, that's what it looks like.
Okay. And on that note, we're adjourned. Ha, 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 ha